building multiple strong brands. Alan, my first question to you is, what constitutes a strong brand?
Well, first of all, hello, everybody. What constitutes a strong brand? A brand is a uniform expression of quality. And so a strong brand is based on a widespread belief in that quality. So the more people who know about it and vouch for it, the stronger the brand. The more the brand is visible, to the extent that it's almost used as a metaphor, you have a strong brand. There was an article in the New York Times, I don't know, a week ago, about Cadillac, and, you know, Cadillac's trying to make a resurgence and so forth, and how people throughout the ages have used Cadillac as a metaphor for excellence. And I think what the article missed was that Cadillac really was surpassed years ago by people saying we're the Mercedes of the business. And so there's several $1 billion in free publicity and free advertising sort of lost because you were a representative for excellence. And it's interesting how sort of cachets develop because despite the fact that Lexus is a perfectly fine car, it's a wonderful car, no one ever says we're the Lexus of the business. So there's a little bit of magic involved, too. My very first brand was a contrarian, and it was by accident, because when I was fired in 85, in a recession, by the way, I was out there amidst, you know, 400,000 consultants, and I said, how on earth am I going to differentiate myself? Since I'm sort of ornery and independent by nature, I decided I would just disagree with everything. And disagree with everything I could logically defend. You know, you don't have teams, you have committees. Leadership doesn't start at the top or the bottom, it starts in the middle. Anything that would get me some attention. And it was only later that people began to brand me as the contrarian, and I kind of like that. And I don't know, 3 years ago I was keynote in Orleans, and my introducer introduced me as a contrarian. Now, you know, 3 years ago was 06, so that's 20 years later. That brand was still being attached to me. So that's sort of the adhesive power that brands have. And sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. I mean, it's not something I did on purpose. My intent was on purpose, but I didn't think about the brand, and it worked. And, you know, if you look at my blog today, it's called contrarianconsulting.com. I mean, that's the address. It's called Alan's Blog because I want to build my name as the brand, but the address is contrarianconsulting.com.
Well, when I met you, many of us met you. We knew your brand as the Million Dollar Consultant. Was that your second brand?
Probably so, because I wrote the book in '91, and Million Dollar Consulting was published in '92, and that title, of course, was an accident. And just yesterday, the McGraw-Hill's Executive Committee, Editorial Committee, approved Million Dollar Speaking and Million Dollar Coaching for next year, which I'll be writing. So that brand came out of the book, and that brand not only is the most powerful and expensive brand I have outside of my name, but it's actually a franchise. I mean, that's how strong that brand became. So I think that probably was my second brand.
Well, the question that everybody has been sending in and calling about is basically, how do you build more than one brand, and how do you keep more than one brand?
Well, that's a very good question. The way you build more than one brand is that you look for what I would call segments of your expertise. What are you good at? What do you want to be known as an authority about? What do people seek you out for? And is it segmentable? Is it differentiatable? You know, is it distinguishable? And you develop a brand about that. I'll give you an example. I had a fellow here yesterday in the Total Immersion program, and it was the first time we had met. He'd been in the mentor program, but we only knew each other by phone. So the first time we met, and we're talking through what he wants to do. And he's got multifaceted approaches. He deals with senior management executives. He's been in business for 25 years. But the thing that really excites him, I said, well, you know, is there something that's really distinguishable? And he says, well, the thing that really excites me is that I help get really outstanding growth for companies. And I said, outstanding growth? He said, yeah. And I said, tell me more about that. He says, well, you know, it's above and beyond what you'd expect and everything else. And I said, well, why do some people get there and some don't? And he said, it depends how fearless you are. And that's when we created his brand, which is Fearless Growth. And that took about 30 minutes. Yeah, it's kind of cool. And you've all heard my stories about the lion tamer and about lifeblood and things like that. But this just happened yesterday. So you look for distinguishable aspects of your expertise. Now, I think the second question you asked me is how do you nurture it, or how do you support it, or something? And you do that by continuing to flog it. In other words, it says Alan's blog, Balancing Act, which is another one of my brands, and the title of my newsletter, it always appears there. Something will say Tips from Balancing Act, or Alan Weiss's Tips, Alan Weiss's Million Dollar Club. You keep presenting the brand publicly in a variety of different media and formats, and you do it relentlessly. You do it shamelessly, and that keeps it in front of people. Because I said at the top here when you first asked me, what is a brand? Well, it's a powerful brand. It's something that people hear about a lot. It's something that people hear through word of mouth. It's viral. And if those of you who know about the accelerant curve, you could make a case that at the very top left of the accelerant curve, what can really draw people in at no cost whatsoever is a very strong brand. But what really drives them down the accelerant curve is trust. And trust is almost a non-factor when you have a strong brand. People walk into Mercedes or Bulgari or Rolex or, pick up a Coca-Cola or go to McDonald's. No matter what economic strata, and you have the trust that the place is run right and it's clean and it's honest and it's quality and all that kind of stuff. And so a strong brand mitigates the need to build all kinds of trust. And so when you've written a book or you've developed a brand through intellectual property and you're invited in someplace, whereas traditionally, if you think about my model, you have to spend time developing a relationship. If your brand is strong, you have to do that because people inherently trust you. They see you as a peer. And so, when I write Million Dollar Consulting or Collins writes Good to Great or Hammer wrote Reengineering or, take your choice, you're meeting with a new prospect. You don't have to prove yourself. And that's what a powerful brand does, but that's why you have to keep it in front of people. That's why I jumped all over McGraw Hill when Million Dollar Consulting got 2009, when me and Dr. Zelli was 7 years old, and I said, enough, this has got to come out in a fourth edition. It's too old. And Money Talks is from 1998, and I've been killing them, and I finally threatened to write a new book without them. And so now we have Million Dollar Speaking. So you have to keep brands alive and vibrant and contemporary.
Well, one of the questions that somebody else wrote in is, okay, you're known as the million-dollar consultant, and then you also have another brand around life balance. How do you maintain both of those brands without confusing people?
Well, because each is supported by separate intellectual property. So if you think about it, I think the first example you used was Balancing Act. So Balancing Act has a newsletter that comes out every month. It's in people's faces every single month. It's got a circulation of 9 or 10,000, whatever it is right now, and every month they see that. A huge hawk just landed on a tree out there, and he's staring at me. I wonder if that's an omen. I started Balancing Act with a seminar. Not many people know this, but there were 30 or 40 people who went to the very first Balancing Act workshop in Rhode Island. And so it has separate intellectual property. It has an interpersonal aspect to it in the workshop. It's got the newsletter, and then I wrote a book on life balance with Wiley. Now, Million Dollar Consulting, on the other hand, has its own separate intellectual properties. The Million Dollar Consulting College, there's the Million Dollar Consulting Toolkit, and so forth and so on. So you support different brands with different intellectual property, and that's why I said earlier that these things have to be segmentable and distinguishable. So you can carve it up, and there's enough to go around. If you don't, if they tend to overlap, it does get confusing. So you support varied brands with varied interactions, varied intellectual property, varied approaches. You could even have varied vehicles, And so if I wanted to call, Balancing Act has its own newsletter, but if I wanted to start a site that simply says the Balancing Act Forum or the Balancing Act website or the Balancing Act blog, you could do that too. You could actually use different media to promote them.
Well, that's the next question is, do you have different websites for your different brands? And if not, how do you keep them together on the same website?
Well, I have a different philosophy, which is really working, exceeding my expectations. And I've begun to write and speak about this. It was a topic at the Million Dollar Club, and Chad and I, in fact, were on the phone this morning talking about it. What I do is I create communities, and the communities overlap deliberately. And the intellectual property and the brands are injected throughout these communities. And so if you're on Alan's forums, or you're in SAC, or you're in the Million Dollar Club, or you're on my blog, or you're in, you know, any one of five or six other things I do. You know, you get the mentor newsletter, you're in Balancing Act. And look at all these communities. I'll insert $1 million consulting or life balance or anything I choose to in any of these communities because they retain their integrity as individual brands, but they also provide added value to all those communities. So if you can think sort of in a little bit of a complex matrix here, all of these communities which overlap and interact are fueled and generated and invigorated by these brands I insert into them. So that's how that coordinates. There's not a conflict so long as each brand is an identifiable entity. Nobody's going to confuse Ferrari, which I use for a while, with $1 million consulting, with Balancing Act, and so on. It's just not going to happen.
So how do you let people know? If you're known as, for one thing, we'll use again the $1 million consultant, and then how do you let other people know, okay, now another brand of mine is Life Balance, and if you want an expert, then you need to come to me for that too.
Well, you have to support it with evidence. I mean, you can't just create a brand and say, you know, this is Fearless Growth. What you have to do is provide evidence of it. So you come out with the Fearless Growth tips for sustainable acceleration. You come out with a website on Fearless Growth. You develop a workshop on Fearless Growth. You do a teleconference on Fearless Growth. You do a video on Fearless Growth. You can go on and on and on. Don't forget, the writing on the wall has become one of my brands, which I use exclusively for video. Anytime you want to come out with, be branded about something, and if you accept the fact that a brand is a manifestation of uniform quality, well, then what's the uniform quality? It has to be in some kind of media that people can access. And that could be interactive, it could be recorded, it could be live, it could be text, it could be a variety of things. But there's got to be a there. So there has to be substance beyond the sizzle.
Well, how do you balance them all? How would somebody, I mean, you've been, your brands are known, you've been around for a long time, but for other people who may not have been around as long, how would they balance one brand or another brand, and okay, today I'm going to write on this blog, tomorrow I'm going to write on another article. How would you suggest that people balance that?
Well, I'd suggest that you simply sit down and write and decide where it's going to go. I mean, I have never sat down. Oh, gee. Should this be on my blog or on the forum or in a book or in an article or in Balancing Act or in writing on the wall or in a teleconference, or should I do a podcast? I mean, I can name another 20 alternatives I deal with. I never think like that. First of all, I'm lazy and it's too laborious. But secondly, it's an absolute pinwheel of dead ends. You just keep spinning. And so you say, okay, I've got a good idea here. I'm going to put it there. Bang. And I'll tell you something, Summer. I mean, nobody on this phone call has 12 brands I've got to worry about coordinating, I don't think. But even if you have two or three or four, if you find that you're gone for 60 days and you've done nothing to support one of the brands, then how much of a brand is it? How much expertise do you really have there? Because if you have expertise about something, you should be passionate about it. And if you're passionate about it, you should be generating some kind of intellectual property around it. You know, there should be intellectual capital in your head that pertains to it. So, you know, just like a magazine subscription that sits on your desk and you never read, how important is it to you? So I don't think that's really an issue. I think the issue, though, is to produce. The issue is to get things out there in one form or another, and then you can decide where it best fits.
Well, here's a question from Sharon Richmond. How do you keep all the email addresses, mailing lists, et cetera, associated with the different brands organized in a way that are easy to manage?
Well, for example, if it's pertaining to Balancing Act, I use a listserv, and all subscriptions are on that listserv. If it's SAC, I have a different listserv, and so forth. But don't forget, some of these are cross-pollinated. And so, you know, there's a premise in that question I don't agree with, and that is I don't necessarily want to keep lists separated by brand. I could easily take the opposite tack. I want to insert all of my brands into all of my communities, and consequently, I don't need to segregate them. Now, when there's something as pro forma as a mailing list or a subscription list for a given newsletter, well, obviously you want to keep that separate. You just have a list that isolates that. But, for example, when I created here's a new brand, you know, Alan's Monday Morning Memo. I decided to do that a month or so ago, and I combined three of my lists to start that, because I felt that people on all three of these lists might appreciate it. It would be valuable for them. They wouldn't see it as an intrusion and so forth. So, you know, I didn't try to create a separate Allen's Monday Morning Memo list. And notice, even with Monday Morning Memo, which I found out I could trademark, I still have my name on the front of it, because that's the ultimate brand.
So the main brand is Allen, and then the other brands are part of the brand of Allen?
The ultimate brand is always your name. You can't always start with it, but you want to get there eventually. And the reason is, I mean, here's the rationale. You don't want somebody to say, get me someone who writes a good newsletter, or even find a guy who writes Balancing Act. You want somebody to say, get me Allen Weiss. In a corporate basis, you don't want somebody to say, get me a good strategist. You want to say, get me Allen Weiss. So the ultimate brand's your name, because that makes you a unique entity. So at some point in your career, and a lot of veterans neglect to do this, by the way, and a lot of neophytes, a lot of newbies can do it immediately. I mean, there's nothing wrong with starting this immediately. But you want to create your name as the ultimate brand, especially, by the way, if you're a solo practitioner, even more important.
Well, I'm going to make a generalization that everybody I know in your community, which is quite large, is always very happy or always wants to get every single thing that you send out. So we know you as the contrarian. We know you as life balance. And it's like we're always waiting, because of who you are, for the next project or the next brand or the next topic that you're going to be writing about.
Well, that's very important.
So,
because my next project is, if everybody sends me a dollar, just a dollar, I'm going to create a cloud formation that will be visible in the Northern Hemisphere sometime in January. So just make a note to send in a dollar. I'm sorry to interrupt, Sima.
Well, no, I thought you were going to donate it to one of your favorite causes.
No, because, you know, my goal is to have the 5 million people who are associated with me on LinkedIn to send me 50 cents each. I mean, that's all I want.
So now, do you use any of the social media for your different brands? And if you do, how do you do that?
That's a great question. I've always been critical of social media, so of course I joined them, because you can't really be critical of something fairly unless you're part of it. And, I mean, that's why I joined Mensa, which is the most ridiculous operation in the entire world. You know, makes the postal service legitimate. But when in the social media platforms, that's a very interesting question, because I'm on Twitter probably twice a day, every day, posting value of about 70 characters, because although you're allowed 140, I want to allow people to retweet or whatever you call it, you know, rechirp, I don't know. But the thing about Twitter is interesting, because right now, as of this morning, I think I have 1,350 followers, and I follow no one. And that's part of my brand. People have remarked on that. I don't follow people. I can learn in different ways. I don't believe in the stupid reciprocity. But what I post is, I don't post dumb aphorisms. I don't post sayings. I don't just, you know, retweet other people. I post value every single day. So in that regard, Twitter's helped my brand. Facebook is just a vast wasteland. I mean, Faceland is like a bad bar scene late in the day. And LinkedIn, to me, is just totally worthless. I mean, it's just stupid. But, you know, but I stay there because I want people to be able to find me if they need to. I have gotten exactly one piece of business through the social media, but I do believe that it helps my brand virally. And I'm in a position where that can work wonders, because if you think of my accelerant curve, when people start to join the parade here, it gets rather exciting. And it costs nothing. You know, it's 5 minutes of my time every day. And so for me, that makes a lot of sense. But for people spending a lot of time on social media who need to build their business, that's insanity.
Well, I'm going to open it up now to questions from the listeners.
Are there people on this line?
Oh, probably about 60.
I thought it was just you and me.
No, but that would be fine, too. But actually, I started this out of selfishness, because it's something I wanted to know. And since I didn't want to just take up an hour of your time, I figured let's have a teleconference and see who's interested. And we have over 60 people.
Do we really?
Yeah, we actually do, Ellen. Hi, it's John.
I better watch what I say.
Some of us were paid to be here.
Yeah, well, I wasn't, so good for you.
Well, John could edit anything out.
That's right.
Well, I don't know. You started recording about halfway through the conference, so you can't charge too much for this.
Yeah, I know. I'll charge half price. So, yeah.
So, who has the first question?
Yeah. Not everybody else.
There were 60 people here, really. What's funny here?
I have a question.
Ah.
A long time no talk.
Who's this?
This is Chad.
Oh, Chad.
Or is known as the Chad.
Yes.
The Chad.
The question is this. Funny you should ask. When do you decide to terminate the brand? And once you have a very powerful brand, second question, what do you do, part of nurturing, to even excel it to a higher level?
The first question is really interesting. I think that you end a brand under one of four or five conditions. One is it doesn't reflect you accurately anymore. You know, let's just suppose that you started your career as the the telemarketing guru, and you've expanded way beyond that now. And in fact, you don't even do that much telemarketing anymore. That is consulting. You subcontract it out. So if it's no longer a core part of your business, you want to end it. A second is some brands become dated. You could call yourself, the Edsel of the community or something. And so just like I remember Jefferson Airplane, the old rock group, changed their name to Jefferson Starship because Jefferson Airplane in the space age wasn't all that exciting. And so if something becomes outmoded or passé or obsolete, you jettison it. A third condition is that when there's confusion, and sometimes despite trademark protection and everything else, there can be confusion, and so you get rid of the brand. Now, another one of my brands, which I share with Fripp, is The Odd Couple. And seeing the publicity for the 2010 Odd Couple, which is going to be very, very exciting. But we can keep that separate from the theatrical Odd Couple. That's no problem. But you have to be careful that there's not a conflict or a confusion, because your brand might be adding to somebody else's business, not yours. And I think a fourth is a question that Sima brought up before, which is how much time and energy do you have so that if you find yourself not paying much attention to it and you're really spending your time more on other brands, then go where your passion is, and it might be time to end that one. Chad, you always make the point you don't want to have a website page that says under construction. But the same thing, you don't want to go to a brand where the newest entry is 8 months old. Somebody asked me to critique their website the other day, and their website was copyright 2004, which basically tells me either they haven't contributed to it in the last 5 years, or they have and they're not bright enough to update the copyright. So things like that you have to watch out for. Now, I think the second part of your question was, how do you take a brand and elevate it to the next level? Just as you would elevate anything, you want to take it to a more powerful media and more powerful people and more powerful exposure. So let's just say that you've got a very successful brand. Write a book about it. Write a book on the topic. My book that's coming out next month is Thrive. And, I've already got a couple hundred orders for it. I expect I'll sell at least, 10,000 books. And Thrive is probably going to become some kind of series I do. I'm not quite sure yet what, but it will become something. But I'm already starting with a very powerful platform there. So you just elevate the brand to a higher and higher level by exposing more and more people in a more powerful manner. And, look at we've been on this telephone call for about 25 minutes, and, I've already flogged the hell out of four or five of my brands, I mean, it's very easy to do when you're in a mindset of shameless promotion, and that's what you need to do with these things. So give some thought to how you take your brand to other media to get other people to mention it, and to a higher-level audience, that is, a more powerful buyer or a more powerful media representative or something like that.
Hey, Alan.
Yeah.
This is John. How are you?
Good.
So we had a question from James Allen in Ottawa. And he wants to know, he says it's specific to him, and I'm hoping that this could be a good value for everybody listening. But he says, I have Street Hockey Millionaire, How to Manage Your Money in Fun and Simple Ways. And he says, I also have SHM Consulting, partnering with executives to improve human and organizational performance. He wants to know, should he try to marry the two together?
No, they make no sense together. And I'll make a rare exception and answer a Canadian question here. But what I would do is change the second one, because SHM, whatever that is, consulting, to me, doesn't say anything. And that's a very long tagline. And the reason he has such a long tagline is he's got to explain what SHM, whatever that is, consulting means. I can't even remember the initials. And you just said it, 9 seconds ago. It might be a reflection on my short-term memory, but nonetheless. So I would keep them separate because street hockey is clever, very clever. but it doesn't play well with this other group, this other sandbox he's trying to play in, which is, you know, executive development or whatever, how we ever define that. So I would keep them separate, but I would come up with something much more attractive for that second one.
Okay, cool. And I don't know if someone asked this earlier or not, but we had somebody from John Moore, I think his name is. And
yeah.
What's that?
M-O-N-E, yeah, John.
Moni, yeah. He says, where, if at all, should your branding appear together? Your professional bio, a common website, et cetera. I mean, where should you put all your brands together?
Well, there's no rule. I mean, you
there's
put
no
them
rule.
Together where they make sense. I mean, I certainly wouldn't have a list on my website that's, like have position papers. I wouldn't have a drop-down menu that says brands and then five brands there. A brand is supposed to represent your quality of thought and the delivery and support and all that kind of stuff. And so you put it where it's appropriate. And, I think one thing that perhaps was implied in one of Sim's questions earlier is you don't want to confuse people. And so you want a brand where it makes sense in terms of your conversation, in terms of what you're trying to provide with value, in terms of whom you're trying to reach. That's where you do use a brand. And you might use more than one. But I don't think you should be thinking in terms of, how do I get my brands together and where do I put them together? That's sort of the tail wagging the dog.
Sure. So, as a follow-on, how many, for a solo practitioner, as a consultant, how many brands, or if it's not a valid question, just let me know, but how many brands do you think a successful consultant should have?
6.4.
6.4? Yeah, that's what
I don't know.
Okay, anybody else have questions?
Yes, I have a question. This is Bill Corbett. Oh.
Okay.
Alan, I've redefined my market and myself as the expert in alcohol drug treatment centers. And what are the three things I should do to move? I want to move three things a mile. What are those three things I should do to get to launch that?
Are you talking specifically about branding or just to launch in general?
In general.
Well, that's not really a branding question, but it's related to it. I mean, I guess if I had to pick three things, one is I would identify those people who would most likely be buying your services. That is, are they individual executives who need the help? Are they treatment centers? Are they employee assistance programs, EAPs, or whatever? But who's most likely? And then how do I most professionally and best put myself in front of them? And I would suggest that since this is, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a rather sensitive and confidential situation, that people's ability to read or listen privately would be very important if it were an individual executive kind of thing. More of a scholarly approach if it were a treatment center kind of thing. And more of a pragmatic business approach if it were an EAP kind of thing. And I wouldn't hesitate about thinking about a brand here. Now, the brand I don't think could be cute, given the subject matter, but I think the brand could be memorable. Something about Bill, forgive me, this is I'm not going to probably be very good, but something about creating new lives, recovering as a lifestyle, helping others to help yourself. Because I've heard you and others say how important it is to lend a hand and help others because it helps you. I mean, I would think about some brand that way that would help differentiate you.
How about like the 85% recovery rate, something?
Yeah. I mean, whatever you think is appropriate.
Okay.
But, something to think about, Bill, is, an article or something that says searching for the other 15. And so you go in the back door to make your point that you've got an 85% recovery rate, but that's not good enough. You're searching for the other 15.
Hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Is there time for another question?
Yes.
Okay, Roberta Guy's here. Alan, going back to Twitter, how do you manage or how do you reflect all your different brands through your twice-daily postings?
I don't. What happens with Twitter is that I post so much darn value on there in 70 characters that people look me up. Occasionally, I'll use, what the hell is it called, itty-bitty websites? I don't know. I reduce some address. So they can
tiny URL.
Whatever the hell it is. So they can visit, something of greater length. But usually I don't. And they look me up because I'm eminently findable. See, talk about brands. If you put alanweiss.com into the into search, into Google, there is no such entity, but you'll be directed to Summit Consulting Group. And if you get to Summit Consulting Group, you'll go to my blog and here and there and every place else. So what happens on Twitter is that people see a guy who's got 1,300 followers, which would be in probably the top 10. If you take out the celebrities, take out Oprah and all those people, probably in the top 10% of Twitter. If somebody's got 1,300 followers, every day is posting value, doesn't follow anyone himself, and they probably recognize my name anyway, a lot of them. They go seek out my blog, which I use for provocative things. They go seek out my website, which I use for credibility things. And then they encounter my brands. And see, what I like is, some of you have heard me speak about having these baskets and a client's needs might fall into some of the baskets that you have. Well, my brands are baskets, and I like to let people decide where they belong. And that way, it's sort of a self-creating prophecy, which is nice, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
So, Alan, then, when you're posting, are you essentially putting out content that could be attached to any one of your different brands?
What my philosophy, I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I just want to be clear. When I post anything, the only question I'm asking myself is, am I providing value to people out there? Because my brand is my name, my ultimate brand. And consequently, whatever value I present is going to be associated with me. Now, they might go to my site and say, God, the Million Dollar Consulting College, or I want to subscribe to Balancing Act, or I want to go on Alan's Forum, or I want to get watch these podcasts, listen to these podcasts, whatever it is. But the question I always ask myself before I write anything or record anything or whatever it is am I providing value that will compel people to want to know more about me? And that is almost the sole criterion I use. That's why I never care if there's a typo in a book. I never care if there's a flub on my video. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. But that I record podcasts in one take. There are errors on them because I don't want to take the time to do two takes, and the errors don't really matter. But there's so much value in there that people will get an RSS feed and say, I want to make sure I know when he does another one. So the only criterion that's really important to me is there value here that will cause somebody to say, this guy is really helpful?
Pat Tiff. Hi, Alan.
Hi there.
Question. In your mind, can you be a very successful consultant with just one brand, or in the natural evolution of things, do you find that there are differentiators that develop other brands?
Let me say this about that, as the famous president said. You can be successful with one brand. You know, Nancy Friedman is a telephone doctor, and she's an expert on all things over the phone. I mean, sales and telemarketing and things like that. Most people don't even know it's Nancy Friedman. And so the telephone doctor is her brand. Punto, basta, that's it. So you can be very successful. However, if you picture the difference between being in a boat on the ocean with one of these 10-mile nets trawling behind you, and you haul in these nets and you release the fish that you don't need or aren't appropriate, but you keep the fish that are appropriate and can sustain you, as opposed to standing in the surf with waders on and a single rod and reel trying to haul in fish, I would suggest to you that you're better off with the big net. And consequently, the more brands you have, the more likely you are to attract a variety of buyers. And so I have always felt as a solo practitioner that the wider your appeal, the more likely you are to be successful because you don't preclude buyers. See, the problem in our business is a lot of buyers, the more specific you get, the more adjectives you use, the narrower your focus. It's an inverse proportion. And so the narrower your focus, the fewer buyers, which is a direct proportion, you're going to attract. So I've always wanted to be vague. I've always wanted to have the big net. And let me decide which fish I keep and which fish I throw back.
I have a question, Alan. This is Sima again. One of my brands, which you helped me develop, is The Inclusionist. And I want to be known beyond The Inclusionist as I want to be known as the person who creates workplaces where people love to do their best work and customers love to do business. How do I expand my brand to that so that all of my clients and potential clients know that and don't only see me as The Inclusionist?
Well, what you just described is a tagline, a long one, but it's a tagline. And so you need to attach that tagline to what you do, providing it will fit in a business card. But, I mean, it's kind of clever, actually. I mean, I like that thought. And you know, we might be able to reduce a few words in there. But and that's why Twitter is such good intellectual exercise, by the way. a brief digression. But if I were you, Sima, I would include that as sort of an italicized tagline on the top of your site, on the top of your blog. See if you can get it on your business card, get it on your letterhead. Include that as your tagline and write an article about it. Write a pamphlet on it. And that way, it's too long for a brand, but it's a notion that you want to get across to people. And then you could say, by Sima Lieberman, the inclusionist.
Ah, thank you. Because, of course, if people are going to do their best work, they have to be feel included.
You have to sell me.
Oh, no. Okay. All right, anybody else? Before I get back to some questions, I'd like to hear if anybody else has any questions. This could be a specific question dealing with your business. This
yes,
is your opportunity.
Yes, I have a question. Sima, this is Dave Gardner.
Who is this?
I have a question for Alan. Dave Gardner?
Okay, Dave.
Quick question, Alan, and if this is inappropriate for this group, tell me, but in terms of brand promotion or extending ourselves out into the marketplace, we kind of know that economic buyers are not going to Google, they're not going to blogs, going to other places. What do you recommend to get in front of economic buyers today where you're not using email and they're not surfing the web to find you? What do you think is the best, most effective ways for promoting brands at this point?
Well, you asked me two different questions. The one question you're asking me is what's the best way to get in front of economic buyers, and the second way is what's the best way to promote a brand. And there's some overlap there, but they're two different questions. So let me just try the first one first. I don't know how many of you visited my blog and saw my article on the brown bugs, but I just looked over. I've got a big 30-inch computer screen here, and I didn't remember taking a video of a bug, and it's a real bug walking across my computer screen. I should get the hawk in here. Okay, so how do you get in front of buyers these days who aren't, you know, technologically savvy or don't choose to surf the web and social platforms and so on? All of you have to ask yourself this kind of a question, and this is what I was alluding to with Bill before. What do the people I'm trying to reach read? To whom do they listen? How are they best influenced? And those, if you consider those channels, you have to get your boats into those channels and turn the motor on and start roaring away. And so if people, you know, the American Council on Life Insurance every year draws 250 CEOs to an annual conference. If you wanted to reach life insurance CEOs, you need to figure out a way to get on that conference agenda or to get an article or an abstract or something in the publications they put out or in a newsletter or get interviewed or whatever. If you find out, and I'll make this up because I don't know, but if you find out that somebody somewhere is doing a web-based audio, a podcast or something, that reaches chief information officers who are inclined to listen to podcasts and things, then get yourself interviewed on that podcast. You have to find out what the means of entree are and what channels lead through those means. So that's going to be different depending upon who your buyers are. But it's not. I mean, it's pretty easy to tell. And so, in a general sense, you know, there's all these business people on airplanes, and you think, well, airplane magazines are perfect. Well, they're not. Not that many people really read them, and they don't always take freelance submissions, and sometimes they charge you to be on the little radio channels, and you don't want to be there. There are these specialized newsletters that go out to people, largely from trade associations, that are hungry for content. And so you have to be creative in trying to find out how to reach these folks. So when I talk about networking, which I do on occasion, you want to network where these people hang out. You want to create products that would be appropriate for them to read. There was a fellow in the mentor program, I cannot remember his name, or I tell you, I worked with him 2 or 3 years ago, and he was an expert on a plant, manufacturing plant, energy control. And his buyer was some kind of plant energy officer, I forget the proper title, usually reports to a plant manager, had budget, and he created this little, like a cardboard thing, like a calculator, some kind of gauge, like a slide rule or something. Anyway, non-electronic, that you could calculate energy efficiency with by plugging in certain things and moving it around like a slide rule. And, you know, it cost about, I don't know, $2 to produce. And he sold it on his website, but, of course, he sent it for free to these guys and women, I guess. And it was a big hit. And they said, tell me, you know, and he said to them, you know, what did you find? He said, well, I'm losing 3% of our energy is being lost. And he'd say, well, let's calculate this and that. And it comes out to $200,000 a year. And he'd say, how'd you like to share the plant manager? You could save $200,000 a year with no capital investment. You know, just invite me in. So there are all these novel ways to meet buyers. Now, I think to get in front of buyers. Now, I think Dave's second question was, how do you promote a brand? And you promote your brand through making sure that it gets play all over the place. Because, in this first instance, the reason I said they were slightly separate questions, you're reaching out to people. In the second instance, a brand is supposed to attract people. And so the brand, you want to get out there as much. Go back to Bill's brand here. You know, let's say chasing the final 15% or whatever it is. If he somehow got that a paragraph of that in bottom line reports, which would be a perfect place for Bill. If he got a, just oh. and they run these little brief paragraphs right here for free information. Mm-hmm. It's very private, very confidential. That's a great place to promote a brand for the kind of audience we're talking about who would see it and react to it. So on the one hand. To get in front of your buyers, you got to find out aggressively what the channels are. But to promote a brand, you want to just get it out there as much as you can because then it becomes passive, and people will find it and come to you.
Okay. Well, then we're ready to go on. Alan, if one of your clients knows you as one brand. I'll give an example. Say somebody, I ran into somebody that I hadn't seen in a couple of years, and he introduced me to somebody that I'd wanted to meet, and he said, yeah, Sima is a great diversity trainer. Well, I don't want to be branded as a trainer anymore. My brand is consulting. How do you, is there a way that you correct a person? How do you deal with it?
Well, first of all, you're not talking about brand here. You're talking about identity, which is different. You don't want to be branded as a consultant. You want to be known as a consultant. Your brand is the inclusion.
Ah, okay.
So just keep that differentiation in mind. But the second thing is you do two things. You correct it right there and say, well, you know, actually, if I may interrupt, I was a diversity trainer years ago, and that's how I got my start. But I've moved far beyond that because I found I'm much more effective as a consultant. And let me give you an example of what some of the achievements I've been able to get for clients as a consultant. So then you change that. The second thing is, if you don't have a chance for whatever reason to change it at the moment, you get back to the person who introduced you or who made the comment by phone or by email or, you know, drop them a note. And you simply say, look, I really appreciate you mentioning me. That was great. If I may, just let me correct one thing. And this is probably my fault because I haven't updated you. You know, take the onus on yourself here. But I'm really no longer a diversity trainer, and I wouldn't want you to be getting people interested in me in the wrong manner. What I'm doing now is. And so that's how you correct.
Okay. And how do you, when you went from one brand, I mean, when you start developing multiple brands, what process do you use to think about what's going to be my next brand?
Well, you know, I'm not that deep. You know, and one thing I want to try to dispel here is you don't sit around, you know, saying I'm going to create three brands this week. What I do is I take a look at what's creating traction. And if something's creating traction, I ask myself if it's worthwhile making it a brand. That's sort of my process. So $1 million consulting immediately created its own traction. And that was no brainer. Balancing act I really enjoyed, but I wanted to see if it had traction. And so I held the workshop. And then I said, well, let me see if I can do this newsletter and if anybody will come. And then that proved really successful. So I wrote the book Life Balance and so on. So I'm constantly testing to see whether things have traction or not. You know, I was sort of using this pseudo brand Ferrari for a long time, and I stopped because I was no longer driving a Ferrari, and it's not really my brand in that, you know, it's somebody else's name. And I'd gotten what I wanted out of it, but it didn't really suit me anymore. So I'm always looking for the kind of traction that you get and the degree to which you can leverage it. And so usually I'll start with the idea or the premise and then see if it is sort of brandable, if you will.
All right. Anybody else have any questions that they would like to ask Alan?
Hi, I have a question. This is Judy.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. So if like when you do your if you do a blog, do you name your blog more like your website, or do you want to pick up something from? Is there a way to use your brand instead, or promote it through the naming of your blog site?
That's a really good question. I'll tell you what my bias is. You know, unlike all of my other responses, which are completely objective and empirically true, my bias is that you use a blog for your brand. Blogs are ideal for brands. And actually, if you had the time and inclination, you could even have multiple blogs. I mean, I have the forum, which is a private chat room, and I have a blog, which is a public sort of a chat room. You can have multiple blogs, but you know, backing off from that, a blog is perfect for your brand, whether it's your name, you know, Judy's Place, or it's some brand that you use about, Judy, you're in like medical, what, not medical equipment, but medical what?
IT, for healthcare.
Okay. you had to think about that. Joe Rinney, I guess, is a medical
Sorry.
Equipment. That's why I get confused. So, you know, so if you want to use a brand instead about, you know, IT and healthcare, you know, intelligent health, let's just say that was your brand, IH for IT, you know, you could do that. That could be your blog. So I think blogs are excellent mechanisms for branding and for building a brand and perpetuating your brand and so forth. You know, I've often said, this is my disagreement with Seth Godin, that you're much more likely to be successful blogging if you have a strong brand first because people will come there. I just think that's unequivocally true, and I think he's just fooling around. But part of what he says is true in that if you're successful blogging, it will help build your brand. And so the reciprocal will also work.
So do you put your blog everywhere, just, I mean, like you said, wherever it's appropriate, but add it to your tagline and that kind of thing? Your signature.
I would put your blog on your signature file. Let me just pause here and remind me where I am in case I forget again. But do not put in your signature file, you know, your Twitter address, your Facebook address, your Plaxico address, your Pepsodent address. I mean, all these kinds of things. Just focus on the stuff that's really important, you know. And now, back to what I was saying. So I would put your blog address on your letterhead and your signature file, prominently on your website, and anything so related, so that you could drive people there. Because, I mean, ultimately, the sequence you want is something people read about you or hear about you or see, drive them to your blog, and they like your blog so much, they get an RSS feed. And see, to me, that's the ultimate, because if people get an RSS feed, and Chad, I'll explain what that means offline. If people get an RSS feed, then they don't have to make the effort to go to your blog. You don't have to have a hit or miss. I wonder if people come back. They're automatically going to hear everything you update. So I think you should do that wherever you can, but just don't dilute it by putting all this other crap in your signature file and other places as well.
Alan, you've written books on branding. You've spoken on branding. You also have a program on shameless promotion, shameless self-promotion.
Shameless promotion.
Could you give us three ways to shamelessly promote our brand that you haven't discussed yet?
Yeah, I can try. And you know, you triggered something interesting. I realized this morning. You know, we're doing a follow-up day to shameless promotion in London after the Master Mentoring training in February, and so I'm coordinating this, and I'm getting, but. There have been 8 people through shameless promotion. I only run it with a max of 4, and I've run it twice. The 8 people in shameless promotion have had such a quantum leap in terms of what they are doing, and you can just read it on the forum. I mean, you can just, Guido and Chad and everybody, Stuart, have been very forthcoming. Linda Henman, I mean, just amazing stuff going on. Catherine Radica. So it's really interesting that there's been this kind of dramatic progress and how important brands are to this. So if I had to give you, would you say 3 recommendations about branding that we haven't really discussed too much?
Yes, that would be totally shameless.
Well, I would say this. Have people introduce you with your brand. If you're making a speech, if you're being introduced casually, no, I don't mean if you're at dinner. You know, my favorite story is this is a true story, I'm in line to be seated, 2 women who haven't seen each other in a long time suddenly see each other. And they say, oh, my God, you know, Gladys, how are you? And the other one says, fine. He says, this is my husband, Roger. And the other one says, this is my husband, Dr. Cohen, which I think is the classically funny line of all time. My wife had to keep telling me to shut up. I was just hysterical. My husband, Dr. Cohen. You know, I see your king, and I'm playing the ace. So, but in a more formal situation, somebody could say, I'd like to meet my colleague, Simone Lieberman. Quite frankly, she's known as the inclusionist. When you're introduced certainly to make a speech, the same thing. So I think that's one way to do it very, very blatantly. I think a second way to do it is to have a little fun with it. For example, let's say you ran a Q&A or frequently asked questions, you know, FAQ on your blog, and you could put lessons from the inclusionist, or the inclusionist says this, or you could have question John, response inclusionist. And so you could keep using that. Instead of using your name, and that could be a pretty cool way to do it. The third way is that, well, one third way is, another way is, get a good graphics person and let them do something around your brand that's really compelling. Jazz it up. So the inclusionist, maybe within the words, there could be two people embracing, or there could be a handshake, or there could be a group. You know, I don't know. I'm not really good, visually with this stuff. Process visuals about as sophisticated as I get. But you can jazz it up with a graphic or some kind of design that it brings it even more to life. And I forget who I was talking about. Was it you? I said intellectual. What's IT stand for?
Information technology.
Oh, right. Information.
I said IT for TI or something. And
that was me. Yeah, you gave that to me.
Yeah, it was intellectual technology for the technologically impaired. I forget what I did, but I thought it was pretty damn good. And so you have something like that, and you can really build a great graphic around there.
Hey, Alan, as a follow-up, you mentioned something in the previous branding teleconference about anthropomorphism or something like that.
Anthropomorphism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What,
good job.
Does that still work better if you try to personalize it like that?
Yeah, I mean, the more people regard anything as a living entity, the more affection they place on it. And so as opposed to something that's just, you know, sort of dead and dull, I mean, I could make a case that even something that's clearly automated can develop certain charms about it. I mean, I think one of the reasons people are so attracted to Apple is that the Mac is so damn attractive that it's almost anthropomorphized. I have the brand new laptop, and I didn't think it'd be much different from the old laptop. I mean, it's very, very similar, but aesthetically it is different. You know, and somebody said to me, "Well, it's a work of art." And so the more personalized you make anything, and that's why your name is the ultimate brand, the more affection people will have, the more they'll give you the benefit of the doubt, the more they'll be attracted to it. So I always think that's an advantage.
Well, Alan, thank you very much. We have time for one more question.
Yes. Alan, going back to multiple brands and blogging, so if you've got two or three brands, do you combine them into one blog, or do you have a separate blog for each brand?
Well, I wouldn't worry about it. In other words, don't worry about combining them into the blog. Think about providing as much value as you can on the blog, and the brands will fit appropriately because presumably the values will flow out of the brands and vice versa. If you want different blogs for various brands, you can do that, but you have to, you know, the thing about a blog is you have to be there at least three times a week. That is, you have to be posting value at least three times a week, preferably five times a week. If you can support that, if you have the time and the inclination and the intellectual property to support that, that's great. So separate blogs for different brands is fine. Or a blog that ranges from one brand to another is fine too. But be careful. You've got to name the blog something. And so if you have multiple brands in there, I'd suggest you name the blog after your name. And that way that's clear and there's no confusion.
Thank you.
Alan.
Simon, hold on. So let me thank Simma and John for setting this up. I mean, I'm noticing these wonderful things within the community, within wheels. You know, we got people meeting in the Northwest and the Southeast, and there's some kind of floating crap game in Detroit. I don't know. But it's wonderful to have all these people taking on the initiative to do this for their colleagues in the community. So I want to thank you two personally for doing that. And this has been a pleasure. And, Simma, this is the very last thing I'm doing today. So I'm just happy as can be.
Oh, what are you going to do the rest of the day?
I am going to go out and get a massage.
Rough day.
Well, you're on Western time. It's almost 1 o'clock here.
Oh, that's right.
It's time to quit, right? It's 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Well, I have one question, Alan. Do you think that you'll be doing some more writing about shameless branding for those of us in the community who would love to read more?
Well, you just made up shameless branding, but.
Yes, I did.
I've already written two major books on branding. One is in the Wiley series, the Ultimate Consultant series, and one's in the Kennedy series, How to Market and Develop a Brand and so forth. So I don't have a whole lot more to say in terms of a third book. And branding I'd rather speak about like this because I find than write more articles on it because I just find it's a much more dynamic subject. Tom Peters has written some good stuff on branding. I'm not always crazy about what he does, but I think he's done some good work on branding. If you want to read some articles about it, I've seen them on the internet and so forth. So, but I'm always happy to do teleconferences like this, and I'm always happy to answer questions, you know, on the blog or on the forum or elsewhere. So, my intent. Now, but shameless promotion, to use the other part of your adjective there, that has had such great results that I do that. So, as people want to do that, if 2, 3, 4 people want to come together, I will be continuing to do those.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Alan, and thank everybody for being on the teleconference, and we will see everybody on the forum.
Ciao.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.